You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a modgepodge. Whole modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, here in the blue room as we make our rounds at the MLS headquarters, David Goss, and out in the octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. It is a big show, guys. It's a massive show. It's a hexagonal show, not a square show, not a circular show. This thing has six sides, and it's very, very important. Of course, what I'm talking about, this big U.S. National Team World Cup qualifier going down on Friday at Avaya Stadium in San Jose, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, FS1 in English, Unimas in Spanish, all the coverage. Where else? MLSsoccer.com.
I don't know who has more pressure, the U.S. national team or us in this preview show.
I know.
Because we no longer have the excuse, Jurgen's going to do what Jurgen's going to do.
Oh, this is a good point. We don't have our crutches gone.
Yeah.
We've got, we're gimping around. We're directionless.
I will take that. I will absolutely take that that trade-off because Bruce is going to do what Bruce is going to do, and we're going to do what we're going to do. Are you guys excited about this one?
I am
nervous.
I'm nervous, but like nervous excitement because the stakes are high and they're obvious, and it's a place where this is where you see the crux of the team. This is where you see the leadership of the guys that are supposed to carry us into 2018 and supposed to lead this team past, the first knockout round game.
I'm nervous because in every reality, this is a Honduras team that can come and beat the U.S. And with the injuries, it's an issue. But I'm also excited to see a team that I don't think is going to be playing with a handicap, which is this chaos and this lack of game plan and lack of cohesion. So it's interesting to start to see. Doyle has said on this show for a year and a half, this is the most talented the U.S. national team's ever been. This is the deepest it's ever been. Let's see it go.
No, I'm with you. I think that this is what we've all been waiting for, right? It's the talent is there, even with all the injuries. The depth is there to make up for all the injuries. And look, Christian Pulisic is an ace in the hole, like the U.S. haven't had since prime Landon Donovan. And he's maybe better. What he did a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Landon will say it himself. What Christian Pulisic did a couple weeks ago against Benfica, you could argue that is the best club game a U.S. national team player has ever played.
I feel like DeMarcus Beasley is getting a little shade here for some Champions League appearances with PSV.
Beasley was great in that run for PSV in 2004, was it? But yeah. he never dominated a game playing as an attacking midfielder in the way that Pulisic did against Benfica. Look, so this is nice, guys.
It is.
Even with the injuries, it's pretty nice.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But, look, I think we can all understand, all of us, all of you at home, just about anybody who cares about soccer in this country, how important this is. The World Cup is potentially at stake, and that is the ultimate prize. That is the most important event on the soccer calendar internationally in the U.S., in Canada, everywhere. The U.S. needs to be a part of it. We will see what happens. We'll get back to this in just 1 second. We're going to talk to Eduardo Solano. He's going to be our ace in the hole when it comes to Honduran and, kind of the back end. We did a little spying. We got him to give us the dirt. So he has that information for us. That's coming up in just a second. Sebastian Legette DuBois is waiting for you on the other side of the break. We're going to talk to him about the U.S., of course. He's got a big opportunity in his hometown, perhaps, the LA Galaxy. And probably most importantly, Dave, Power Rangers. Becky G is the Yellow Ranger.
Hashtag Yellow Ranger. Hashtag Team Yellow Ranger. Go, go, Power Rangers.
Yeah, forever and ever and ever. This one right over the top of Doyle's head out there in the octagon.
More of a Voltron guy, actually.
Yeah, not even.
Thundercats. Big Thundercats fan growing up.
I was a big Thundercats fan.
Those sound lame. I'm not going to lie. Those sound really lame. Bastian Schweinsteiger. Let's get into some MLS news before we get to the U.S. stuff. Bastian Schweinsteiger. Finally, the deal is done. It happened basically it happened the morning after we got done recording. But there were kind of inklings throughout the day that something might happen. It did. 1 year deal, no transfer fee from Man U, reportedly $4.5 million for that 1 year. 32 years old. He is a legend. There's no other way to put it. This guy's a legend. He's a World Cup winner. He's a guy who has 121 caps for Germany.
He was captain of the German national team at multiple international championships where they were favorites or winners.
Is that good? That position, leadership,
seems pretty good.
That
seems
decent? That's good. I think that's pretty good. There have been some complaints, we can just go out and say that, about, say, his age and his profile being that he hasn't really been a player with Man U while he's been there, kind of a bit part guy for them. Of course, they're pretty good as well. There have also been some complaints though, about where he fits in the midfield. With the Fire, of course, they already have Dax McCarty and Juninho. They're kind of in that 8 and 6 role back and forth. Your feelings on this deal, both perception-wise and practically on the field for the Chicago Fire team?
I think practically on the field, there's a question. Because, as you said, that there's always – I mean, deep central midfield, which is where Schweinsteiger is at his best, that's where the Fire are at the strongest with McCarty and Juninho. He's not a perfect fit with those guys. I think it'll force, Veljko Panovic to go to a 4-3-3 with maybe you have Juninho sit deep and you have McCarty and Schweinsteiger is both kind of like number eights. And you play without a true 10. And you say, okay, we're going to spread the ball early and we're going to get the wingers involved, and that's where the offense is going to come from. The other option is you try to play Schweinsteiger as a true 10, which I don't think is going to be the best use of him, but he's still Bastian Schweinsteiger. I mean, this is my second favorite player behind Xavi of this millennium, so I'm pretty happy to see him in MLS. I do think the negative reaction was disproportionate from a lot of pretty smart soccer fans with blue check marks next to their name on Twitter.
Hey, those don't matter. I don't have one. Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
don't need that.
You're a nobody, Weeby. Mm-hmm. I get skepticism, but this is not the Fire waving a white flag here. This is the Fire still bringing in Bastian Schweinsteiger, who did play 30-odd games for Manchester United last year and was a starter before Jose Mourinho got there, and does still bring a lot of stuff to the table that this team needs. And kudos to Nelson Rodriguez, by the way, for winning a 7-figure game of chicken with Jose Mourinho.
Yeah.
The Fire were absolutely not going to pay a transfer fee for Schweinsteiger. Manchester United wanted them to, and the Fire won that one. And so I think there's a lot to be happy about. It seems like the fan base is happy about it. I think he'll bring some people to the stadium. And if they bring people to the stadium and they win, that's a good signing.
And I think that's the point of it. One, you didn't have to pay a transfer fee. Two, it's a one-year deal, so you're not locked into anything for long term. And I think three is we've been talking about this team building, you know, could be a playoff contender, could be successful. This is a successful franchise that had a ton of support. They've lost some of those supporters in the stadium, and this is a guy that can at least pique interest and get people to come. And if they come, then they'll see Dax McCarty and Juninho and David Akam and the guys that we've been talking about, the guys that excite us. But you need someone to get them in that building, and this gives you that. They're going to host the All-Star game this summer, which is a big event. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a big deal in the city. It's going to help you build this team up, and I think the talent is there for them to contend, which means if you can get people in the building, they're going to enjoy the product that they see.
And it's still yet to be seen how this is going to work on the field. Of course, we know that. You won't know how it works until everybody's down there. You have 11 guys running around in cleats doing their thing. But I'm with Doyle in the sense that, look, this guy was a out-of-this-world, once-in-a-generation player for a reason. To look at him and say, well, I'm not sure that he can adapt, to me is doing a disservice to Bastian Schweinsteiger. And it's doing a disservice to those players around him because I think he will come in and adapt. And it may not be in the perfect position. And it may not be the perfect fit on the field. And he may not go out and just blow it up with, you know, actionable stats where you're saying, oh, goals, assists, chances created, whatever, whatever, whatever. But if he can build in this year and perhaps beyond, you know, depending on how the contract situation works out, help build, I should say, a culture along with Dax McCarty and those guys that translates longer down the road and outlives them, that alone will be a win for them because they are a team that has a lot of domestic talent. If those are kids and those are guys and those young stars can learn from a guy like Bastian Schweinsteiger, that's a great situation.
Yeah, especially for the kids like Georgi Mihailovic, who they signed as a homegrown this offseason. He's already played a little bit, and Colin Fernandez, who they've had for a few years, Cam Lindley, another very good central midfielder from that homegrown program. But I do want to make this point. One of the teams that's garnered a lot of praise on this show and just about everywhere else early in this MLS season is the Houston Dynamo. And they play a 4-3-3. They do not have a playmaker. They keep the defense or the midfield deep and tight, and then they let their attackers get out and run. And that is exactly what the Fire are probably going to do with Schweinsteiger in this lineup. So I don't see why we praise Houston for what they've done and are so skeptical of the Fire. I think that this is something that can work, even if it's not 100% a slam dunk.
Well, we want your thoughts, of course, at Extreme Radio, Extreme at MLSsoccer.com. Fire fans have often been very vocal, let's say, about the direction of the team and where things are going under Nelson Rodriguez. We want to know what you think. We also want to talk about, before we get to Eduardo Solano and the Honduran scouting report here, Real Salt Lake, because this was actually the news that I was thinking of that happened right after we got done taping. Jeff Kassar dismissed as head coach of RSL. They, of course, had a tough three games to start the season, but they were on an 11-match winless streak since last year. He was 38, 37, and 30 overall. You know, right along the lines there, they were both a playoff team and not a playoff team under Jeff Kassar. He inherited a team from Jason Christ that was coming off an MLS Cup appearance. I mean, it was a one of the Pantheon teams, I think it has to be said, in MLS history. Didn't go like they wanted. Three games is awful early, you would think. We're still figuring out where they may go next. What is, to you, Matt, Jeff Kassar's legacy with RSL, and what do you think was the straw, so to speak, that broke the camel's back?
I think the legacy, look, it's hard to take over for a legendary coach, and Jason Christ is a legendary coach at RSL, and I think he's going to end up doing a really good job with Orlando City. The legacy for Jeff Kassar is that he actually, he did better than people are giving him credit for. It was not a disaster. We've seen teams become disasters after their coach leaves. DC United, after Bruce Arena left, being a great example of it. The straw that broke the camel's back is he ended up being way too rigid and inflexible with that 4-3-3, and he ended up not getting enough out of the kids. And maybe that's a little unfair because Justin Glad was hurt, so we didn't get to see him this year, but why was Omar Holness not playing more? Why did Jordan Allen bounce around from position to position to position for the last 3 years? Why did Bofo Sacedo have to go out on loan last year? This is a talented player who can play in MLS. If it was FC Dallas, he would have been playing. And I think the path forward for RSL is to do what they've done in FC Dallas, to find a coach who will build up the kids. I mean, it's a business. You got to be able to sell those guys for seven figures and bring the next group in and have confidence that can keep happening, that it ends up being an assembly line that can win.
Doyle, you're talking about a coach that can bring guys in, Martin Vasquez. He runs the academy. He's an experienced guy in the U.S. outside. Is he the name that you're looking at?
He's a name I would look at, but I kind of wonder if Craig Weibel will want to just have a clean break from the previous regime at all levels, so to speak. And I think we've seen that with Real Monarchs a little bit. And I kind of expect it to be a new unconnected face. The name that I've heard from a couple of people, including Brian Dunseth, who we all know is as plugged into RSL as anyone, is Gio Savarese from the New York Cosmos. I think he's done a really good job with that team. He's a guy who could handle Major League Soccer-sized egos, and he's got connections overseas that can maybe help in terms of moving players along.
There's also been a lot of talk about Gio being a guy who was in some discussions for some other jobs here recently, so it's not as if MLS teams are not paying attention. You know, I've thrown out Robin Fraser.
It's an obvious
He was definitely in the conversation post-Christ, and I don't think things worked out on that end, but you've seen what he's done as an assistant, of course, with the Red Bulls and now Toronto FC. I think he'd be a really attractive one for them as well. And Mike Pecky is right there. He's within striking distance, and there's kind of word on the ground that he's impressed after coming in as Real Monarchs coach and really shown a side that they like a lot. So we'll see maybe how that goes about things. But I'm with
you. Too bad it won't happen quick enough and he can't lead them his first game to Red Bull Arena on Saturday.
Yeah, but they are absolutely ravaged with injury. So I don't think that's the one that you want to have him start his tenure on.
What a story.
Anyway, it would be a great story. The one thing I would say about Martin Vazquez is there is an element here, and maybe the best way to say it is you got to put people in the jobs they're best suited for. And Martin Vazquez is so good at the youth development side that maybe you don't want to take him away from the place where he can most affect your club, which is developing those young players that eventually come up and have to be pushed
but
into the first team.
3 months ago, someone would have said that about Wilmer Cabrera. People are still saying that about Wilmer Cabrera.
And people could still be saying that about Wilmer Cabrera in 6 months.
That's true.
So by no means are three games the answer, but there's a lot to figure out here for Craig Weibel as well as Deloy Hansen, because this is not a one-man decision-making show. Deloy's the guy with the greenbacks. He's the guy running this thing. He will have to be in on that decision-making process as well. Again, we want to know what you think, RSL fans. Who should lead your club into the future? Before we get out of here, before we get to Eduardo Solano, let's talk quickly about the Hex standings. The U.S. are in a weird position here, and by weird, I mean straight-up goose egg after two games. 6 goals allowed, just 1 goal scored, -5 in the goal differential column. They're all the way at the bottom. Trinidad and Tobago just above them, also no points. Costa Rica on top with 6, and you have Mexico, Panama with 4, and Honduras with 3. And I don't think they've expected to drop one to Panama, did Los Catrachos. When you look at these standings, what jumps out to you? And then the flip side of that question is this actually a must-win game for the U.S.? Is it literally, in the most base sense, a must-win game for the Americans? Or could they lose this conceivably and still be okay? Remember, Mexico lost 4 games, or didn't win, I should say, 4 games at home last round.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. can conceivably lose this or not win and still be fine. But it's a must win. This is, I think Honduras is the second weakest team in the hexagonal. The U.S. have to bury Honduras and Trinidad and Tobago every chance we get. And then I conceive of it as a competition between the U.S. and Panama for the third spot in qualifying. Now, obviously, that can change. If the U.S. takes 6 points out of these 2 games and then get hot in the summer, there's certainly a chance to win the group again, as we've done for, I think, three straight times. But for the long-term health of the program, for the short-term sanity of the players and the coaching staff, this is a must-win. You cannot lose at home to Honduras after starting the hexagonal 0-2. If you do, this is a tailspin. It turns into a death spiral. So I understand why Bruce and company are soft selling or whatever, trying to change the narrative. This is a must win, period.
No, I agree with Doyle. And when you look at it, it's going to be more congested, I think, than it has in past years. There's the chance that Costa Rica runs away with this thing. I mean, they're going into Mexico Friday night, a Mexican team with a lot of injuries. Costa Rica has a few injuries as well, a loss at center back, but they're the power right now, and they have gotten good results in Mexico City before. We've seen, like you said, in the last round of qualifying, Estadio Azteca not be as strong as it's been in the past. If they get a result and the U.S. can win this game, they'll be tight in on Mexico. They'll be moving up. Trinidad and Tobago has a must-win at home against Panama, so they're going to be fighting for those points. So I think if the U.S. can get a win, they can jump a couple teams, get back to where they want to be at 3-4, but also I think they're in danger of losing touching distance with the top of this qualifying. And like Doyle said, they need to get wins against Honduras and Trinidad and Tobago, but they need to win every home game from here on out. They have to
get some results on the road as well. Sunil Gulati said as much. I hope Ed Mendez is listening right now to you. Put the Costa Ricans at the top of the table,
it's
baby.
So true, though. You look at that team and maybe it's not the same team it was at the World Cup, but it's a team of a lot of players who know what they want to do and a lot of players who are playing well overseas and getting a lot of playing time. And then you look at the U.S. and Mexico with their injuries and just how easy it gets chaotic for both these teams. Us because of our coaching change. Mexico because it's the Mexican national team.
Yep.
That's what it's spelt chaotic.
Hey, watch that chaos. FS1 is the location. Unimas as well. 10:30 p.m. on Friday night. The U.S. and Honduras from Avaya Stadium in San Jose. We have a guy on the inside to give us some intel, Eduardo Solano. He works for Diario La Prensa, out of New York City, though, I think, at New Guayork, N-E-W-G-A-U-Y-O-R-K. Eduardo, what's up, man?
Hey, how are you guys? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. We hope that you can educate us a little bit and prepare us for what the U.S. is looking at on Friday night. Let's start off the top. The stakes we know for the U.S. are huge. What are the stakes for Honduras in this game? How important is it? What's the approach back in San Pedro Sula, throughout the U.S., in the squad?
Well, we're always excited about playing the United States and Mexico. Like, these are, like, our biggest rival when it comes to CONCACAF. We also have Costa Rica, but that's, like, in Central America, which is a big game for us. And coming into this game against the United States, like, we're pretty confident. Like, it's not like back in the days that we play United States and we come in thinking that we're going to lose. This is not the case. Like, everything changed. Like, you see the players, you see the team, the way that we've been performing, like going to the World Cup, they changed everything when it comes to the fans, the players, and the people that manage the soccer in Honduras. So we're pretty confident that we can come to the United States and get a great result. Maybe a draw or even the 3 points.
That's pretty heady stuff, and I have to imagine U.S. fans are out there getting a little bit worried because when you look at the hex standings, Eduardo, of course the U.S. are at the very bottom with 5 goals down here and 2 losses. That's not where they wanted to be. What's the feeling in Honduras when they look at that situation with the U.S. national team? Would there be kind of this sense of happiness to heap on a little bit more misery on what has been arguably the power in the region for the last 15, 20 years?
Actually, we want to see the United States to do good. We don't want Mexico to do good. And as a fan, as a journalist, and because of what I get from the players, this is the moment that we need to come and take advantage, because for us, it has to be like really, really difficult to win in the United States. So this is like a golden opportunity. And we're always looking back to that game in Washington, D.C. I think it was in 2001 when we beat them 3-2. And we want more of that. Like, that's a game that means a lot for us. But we want to have that feeling again, because every time we play the United States, it becomes really difficult. So now that they in this position, for us, it's like the moment to take advantage and grab 3 points, because if we don't do that, it's gonna be more difficult for us in the future. And we already lost 3 points when we played to Panama, so we want to get those 3 points back. So somebody's gonna have to pay for it, and we're thinking that it's gonna be the United States. And when we play Costa Rica, hopefully we're gonna beat them too.
Coming into this one for Honduras, you made a big move bringing Jorge Luis Pinto from Costa Rica, who had so much success in the World Cup, to Honduras. Coming into this matchup, how do you expect him to go about this game? How do you expect him to line this team up and challenge?
I'm going to tell you something about our coach. I was talking to Roger Espinosa like 2 or 3 days ago and asked him, like, how does he feel about, like, going to the national team? He said, bro, I'm pretty sure the coach is going to be ready. And when we get there, he's going to tell us everything that we need to know about each one of the players in the United States. So I'm pretty sure the team is going to be ready for this big game. Jorge Luis Pinto is a guy with a lot of character. He's always pushing the players. He pay attention to every single detail. And I'm pretty sure even with the new players that came to the United States, he already getting a scout report on every player, and he's going to be ready to face them. Even such a question, or all the players that came into the United national team last minute, I'm pretty sure he's going to be ready for that, and that he's getting the team ready, and he's really, really demanding. that's something that make Carlos Costa to stay away from the team. Like, he don't want to be part of it because of that. But the rest of the players, they bought in, and they're going to try to do what they asked to do from the coach.
One of the big names coming in for this game who wasn't there in the last round of qualifying, of course, Andy Nahar. He's one of the biggest names in Major League Soccer history. What he did as a homegrown, what has he meant for Honduras? What is the view of him from fans in Honduras as a player who grew up here in the U.S., now playing in Europe?
Well, for us, Andy Nahar is like our biggest player. Like, back in the day, we used to have a lot of players in Europe and Italy and some other countries, but now it's only Andy. And every time he comes to the national team, it's like he's different than the rest of the players. He brings like different quality. He brings another level in type of soccer. So we're really excited. Even I interviewed Bonilla Garcia last week, and he said, you know what, this is the best thing that happened to Honduras, to have Bonilla, Andy Nahar for these games. And I'm pretty sure with the last games that he's been playing after his injury, his level got really, really high. Even he was selected as one of the 11 best players in the Europa League. So for us, it's big. It's big to have Andy Nahar back. And some other players like Minor Figueroa, like the level that he's been playing lately with FC Dallas, like it makes us feel really good about ourselves. Roger Espinosa, what he's been doing in Kansas City. And even though at the beginning it was kind of rocky when you see the players from Honduras, now it seems like another story, and everybody's really confident and happy to have all of these players come into the national team.
Eduardo, give me an idea of what this attack is going to look like. Because the U.S. on the back line right now, there are a lot of question marks about how that'll work, how the central midfield will work between injuries and suspensions. What is the attack that Jorge Luis Pinto is going to put together look like? Who plays where? Can we see Albert Elise maybe? I know he's a big he's a guy that we like to talk about on this show. Is Romel Kyoto in the running for that? How are you going to score goals?
Well, I'm expecting to see Romel Kyoto. I'm expecting to see Albert Elise and Andy Nahar. I think this is the team that's going to be playing. And on the back, maybe in the middle, we're going to have Roger Espinosa, Minor Figueroa, Henry Figueroa, Donis Escobar, that actually he was injured, and the coach, he sent him to Honduras to have a game to play on the National League, to play one game so he could be ready for these upcoming games. So Emilio Aguirre, I think he's going to play. Even though there's a lot of like question marks about who's going to be on that position, because they've been mentioning like Cesar Oseguera that's going to take his place. And Jorge Clavos, like he's always been part of whatever Jorge Pinto do. So I'm expecting a really, really offensive team from Honduras, and we're going to be attacking from the get go. And I don't think they're going to play to the defensive game, because we have the tools to go and grab the 3 points.
When you look at Honduras right now, and it's such a young team, it looks like that's going to take the field. You mentioned Elise, Kyoto, and Nahar, all guys in their young 20s. Coming off a golden generation from 2008 to 2014, finally qualifying for the World Cup, guys like Pavon and Suazo, where does Honduras see themselves? Where do you see this team going over the next 3 to 4 years?
Well, actually, we have a lot of players like coming up and being successful. You mentioned Elise, you mentioned Kyoto, but we also have Lozano. We also have Derek Sombuelto, a player that is like having a lot of success in the U-20 and is playing in Spain. And we also have a lot of good players coming up, like Brian Acosta. He's the captain of Real España in Honduras, and actually I consider him like one of the best players in Honduras right now. And you see like all of these players like Boniek, Roger Espinosa, Minor Figueroa, they already have somebody to take their place once they decide that they're not going to be with the national team. So actually, we have a lot of future in the work that the coach has been doing, like, over the years, is going to allow us to be competitive in the next, like, 3 or 4 or 5 years. And if you see all of these players, like Arvid Elise, February 12th, he turned 21. Romel Kyoto, he's 25. Lozano, I think he's like 24, 25. We have a lot of players coming up. And it's like a lot of people tells me, like, I don't even know how Honduras get so many players, like, being a country so small. In our country, like, we don't have basketball players. We don't have another athlete. We play soccer. That's what we do. That's all we have. So everybody wants to be a soccer player, like actors or all of that stuff that people have here in the United States. We don't have. We only have soccer players.
Of course, a lot of those players are ones that MLS clubs are looking at. You know, Elise, Kyoto coming in, helping the Dynamo out. But we've seen it over and over in this league. There is a lot of quality to be had in Honduras. What do you think about Hondurans in MLS? What do the people in Honduras think about that as it pertains to the advancement of their careers? And also, who might be the next guys that we could look out for that MLS teams should be targeting?
Well, before, like, mostly of the people, they used to think, like, a player from Honduras coming to the United States, it was like a waste of their time and talent. Now everybody is looking at MLS like one of the biggest leagues in the world. So for us, like, having our players to come here is a plus. And mostly of Honduran players that come to MLS, like, they've been having a lot of success. Like, you see Bonin Garcia, you see Roger Espinosa, you see Minor Figueroa, and now you see Elise and Kyoto. And I'm pretty sure there's a lot of players that they're going to follow the same footprints, like Henry Figueroa. I have information that he is the target for one of the MLS teams to come in the future. I know that Douglas Martinez from the U-20 national team, he's going to be playing with the Red Bulls too. And I'm pretty sure there's more players willing and waiting for an opportunity to come to MLS. And we love the league. It fits the talent of the Honduran players. So I'm expecting to see, like, way more Honduran players doing the same things that Kyoto, Elise, Roger Espinosa, Minor Figueroa, Andy Nahar, and some other players did in this league.
A tantalizing thought for MLS fans, no doubt about it. Eduardo Solano, he is the international correspondent here in New York for Diario La Prensa. Eduardo, before I let you go, man, I need a prediction. Who's winning this game out in San Jose?
Oh, I think Honduras is going to win, maybe 2-1.
Oh, people are.
Yeah. And I'm gonna have Kyoto and Elise doing the damage.
Oh, Houston Dynamo fans are going to be split about that one. You can follow Eduardo on Twitter. Check out his work, of course, New GAU York on Twitter. Hit him up. Eduardo, thank you so much for joining us, man.
Bless you, and thank you for having me, and have a good day, guys.
2-1 to Honduras, says Eduardo Solano. That is interesting. U.S. fans may be getting a little nervous about that. Doyle, the big thing here is Andy Nahar, and it's Kyoto, and it's Elise, young attacking trio. Who should the U.S. be most wary of? Who's the person that would do the damage as you see it?
I mean, those three guys are a good guess, any of them. But to me, the guy is Roger Espinosa, because I think if it's going to happen for Honduras, it's going to happen off of turnovers he causes. So the U.S. have to make sure that they sort of neutralize Espinosa, pull him out of position. And then when he does go off hunting, drive the ball into that central midfield spot that he just vacated and turn their aggressiveness against them and turn it into chances.
We'll get into the nitty-gritty in just a second. I'm cutting you off.
Well, I thought Doyle was going to go hipster on you and say, like, Lozano, the other attacking young player. You didn't say, Andrew.
He didn't. That where you would have gone. You went straight hipster on this one. We'll talk a little bit about X's and O's right after the break.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratimeradio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I won't stop till I get to the top. I'm Rocky from the block. Always had a little, but I wanna lie. No matter where I go, I know where I came from.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, Andrew Ruby, David Goss, and Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. In just 1 second, Du Bois, Sebastian Legette, here to talk to us about the U.S. national team's big game on Friday night in San Jose against Honduras. Also about the Galaxy's slow start, but more importantly, about Power Rangers. Seriously, stick around for that. That's the money. That's the good stuff. That's why Extra Time Radio exists. Let's talk a little bit of X's and O's, guys. Doyle mentioned right before we got in here that he thought Roger Espinoza is the player to watch for Honduras. Now that we've kind of seen all the moving and shaking, Dave, we've seen some of the injury news. We're still a little bit iffy on Jordan Morris's status. What do you think the U.S. will look like on Friday night? What should they look like? What should Bruce do?
Well, those are two different questions.
All right, answer however you want. Just whatever you want.
I would make it a 4-2-3-1 because I think without having Fabian Johnson and Bobby Wood there, I would get a guy like Sasha in an attacking position to control the game, or Dempsey, whoever it is that's going to be that. I'm not sure that's what he's going to do, so I would expect to see a partner for Bradley who can get up more in the attack. I think Bedoya is the obvious name there, a guy who can see the final pass, who with Philadelphia pushes into that final third and creates opportunities. And so then you've got Pulisic on one wing. You try and get some talent on the other wing, and it looks like right now you have no choice but to go Josie and Dempsey up top. And I think the U.S. is in a position where Jozy Altidore has to show that he could dominate in World Cup qualifying.
I'm with Gasman here. And look, Jozy Altidore has dominated in World Cup qualifying. He is the all-time leading scorer for the U.S. I think he's got 16 goals. Dempsey's got 13. I think finding the balance is right because both these guys like to pull off the front line and into the space between the lines of defense and midfield. Jozy has to sort of curb that and be a guy who occupies the center forwards, create that space underneath for Dempsey, hopefully for Darlington Nagbe to pinch in from the left, and of course Christian Pulisic just blowing through the lines like he does for Borussia Dortmund. It is going to be a 4-4-2, I'm pretty sure. I think it'll be Bradley at D-mid and then either Bedoya or Kellen Acosta or maybe Legette in central midfield as sort of more of a box-to-box role. I'm fine with this. It's good to have Kleshchen off the bench in case Bruce wants to tinker and change the formation a little bit. As we all said at the top, even with the injuries, the U.S. have more than enough to win this game. There can't be any excuses. They got to go out and get it done.
They do. I'm interested to see where Darlington Nagbe plays. If he starts this match, I'd love to see him on that left side. And I think this is the sort of situation where he can thrive. Maybe San Pedro Sula is not the place for a player like Darlington, just in the sense that possession's a little bit different and the way they want to play there and the surface that you're on and the conditions. But I think this is a game in which Darlington Nagbe could show us those flashes that we see. And all you need is one or two flashes in a game like this.
I think that's part of it. But it's also, look, Darlington Nagbe draws a million fouls. The U.S. is going to start a 6'3" right back, a 6'4" center back, a 6'3" center back, 2 6'1" forwards. I think Honduras is going to have maybe one guy who's 6 foot in the starting lineup. We have to hammer them on set pieces. We have to get as many set piece opportunities as possible. That means Darlington Nagbe starts. I know it's kind of like throwing him into the mix, but he's ready for it.
He's also a guy that can stretch the field with his speed. And that's another thing. I think also Doyle's talking about Josie. I think playing with Giovinco will be very good for this team because of what he has to do with Giovinco. It's more similar to what he has to do with Dempsey because Giovinco is a guy who likes to find the ball and float around. Jose, I think, has gotten better at being a true center forward in those situations, and it'll allow him, I think, to be more comfortable playing alongside a player like Dempsey.
Huge game, 10:30 p.m. on Friday night at Avaya Stadium. The U.S. national team taking on Honduras, the third game of the Hex. It is a must-win. It really is. On the line now, Sebastian Legette. We don't know his role yet, but we know that he's got some great stories to tell us. Sebastian, what's up, man?
Everything's great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're just trying to pump up that 230,000 follower count, man. You got like a small city following you.
What's that?
I said you have like a small city following you.
Oh, my God. People, you know, like what they see. And, you know, I try to be funny on there. And, you know, I just try to make people laugh, I suppose.
It is. It's a good follow. You should definitely add that to your daily routine. Of course, we're here talking about the big game on Friday night, United States-Honduras. 10:30 p.m. Eastern, you can watch it on FS1. The Hex is complicated right now for the U.S., Sebastian. Two losses in two games, that's not where people thought the team would be. We just got done talking about the stakes. They're very, very high. When you think about the stakes for this game, what do you think?
Well, no, I mean, you're right about what we said. You know, we definitely didn't believe we were going to be in this position. But, you know, I think we're not putting an unnecessary stress on ourselves and more pressure. We're very calm and know what our game plan is, and we know we have to execute it.
So we just got off the phone with a Honduran journalist and fan who predicted that they would win. Of course, he's a little bit biased there. But the team in Honduras has taken not a big change here. They've been successful probably the last 10 years here in CONCACAF, went to a couple World Cups. This is no longer a game where you look at it and say, okay, there's one or two guys on the other team that we have to account for. This is a good team. This is 18 players that you guys will have to deal with. When you look at this challenge, what do you see from a team perspective? What is it that the U.S. needs to do? What do you see from Honduras that has to be dealt with?
No, well, they're definitely a good team, and it's, you're right. I mean, as time, soccer's changed a lot, especially in Central America, and it's, you know, they have a high level of playing and a high intensity, and we have to match it. And, we're not taking it lightly. We've done our homework, and it's, you know, they're not going to make it easy on us. We do have a lot of players to be careful of, but I think if we're tactically sound and we do our job right and know what we have to do, I think we'll get the job done.
For you personally, this is going to be your first chance in World Cup qualifying. We always hear about young players saying, I lean on veterans. What is it that you're asking them? What are you unsure of? What are you nervous about or excited about going into this first experience?
Well, more than anything, I'm excited, and I'm going to enjoy it. More than anything, I'm going to enjoy it. But definitely, you definitely look for the veterans just to use their experience and kind of have them just vocally help you out during the game and before the game, and just kind of guide you through it all. And I believe we have great group of guys in this locker room, and they've definitely helped me out so far. I'm really, really excited.
For you enjoying it, help means that you're kind of going to be close to home. It couldn't be a better spot for you. You play in LA, you're from the Bay Area. How fortunate is that this is when you're going to get your first World Cup qualifying call up?
Yeah, no, it's something you couldn't write it any better. I think, just having the family very close and just, this is where I kind of grew up playing, and now I'm here at a World Cup qualifier. It's just, it's a very surreal moment in my career.
So we talked to Brian Dunsett the other day, and he kind of waxed poetic for, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes about what it meant to him to represent the U.S., and he did it at the youth levels and a little bit at the national level, but was never a big-time right. player for the team. When you step out onto the field, when you think about the honor, what is it that really strikes you? What goes through your mind?
I think, when I played the games in January, I mean, it was, those two games were a time to, like, really enjoy it and soak it all in. And now it's sort of a World Cup qualifier where, like, we're really depending on, we have to win. And, people are on our back and the media's on our back. There's a little more pressure, and it's the real deal. And even though I will enjoy it, I definitely want to play a big part in it. And I'm in this for the long run. I'm not just, here to fill in or anything like that. I really want to do well for this country and for this team.
What is what's kind of the vibe Bruce Arena's given off right about now? You said that you guys are, hey, we can't get in the trap of putting all this pressure on us before the game and kind of getting trapped in this media vortex that will happen inevitably. How does Bruce reflect out? What's the vibe he gives off?
I mean, he's, even though there's a lot of, I've worked with him for the last, almost 2 years now, and there's never any sense of panic. He's very calm. And I think it's very contagious throughout the group. And I think up until this point, I know we have the game tomorrow, but everyone's very relaxed, and we just know what we have to do. He's done a good job of setting out the game plan, and it's sort of embedded in us at this point, And so there's no panic at all.
How different is Bruce compared to LA Galaxy now with the national team?
I think there's not much difference. I mean, I've been asked that before, but it's sort of like he hasn't changed any the mentality or the approach to any game. I think obviously the opponents are different and the players involved are different, but the winning formula hasn't changed in my eyes. Really seeing him transition from LA to the national team.
How important a role did he play in your career? I mean, I know we've talked about it before, but now with a little bit of time to look back on it and the opportunity he gave you and where you've now been able to take it, when you, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, when you're thinking about your career, what place will Bruce Arena have in it?
No, definitely. I mean, you know, very, very high on the list. I'm not shy about saying that because he really did. And everybody this staff, really, it's very similar to the LA staff. I mean, but he definitely gave me that big opportunity. And even if things didn't go well at first, or, you know, he still stuck with it, and it gave me so much confidence. And you know, till this day, you know, that's why we have a good relationship on and off the field. And it's, you know, and I'm very grateful.
Do you have a feeling, Sebastian, of what role you'll play in this game?
I think we're going to training. You know, we train later in tonight in the stadium, and I think after that, I think we'll have a very, very good idea, obviously, because the game's tomorrow. But, you know, I don't think there's any final pieces set just yet. But we will see.
We will see. 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Friday night, U.S. Honduras on FS1 and Unimas. Make sure you tune into that one. Of course, we'll be talking about it an awful lot after the weekend is over. High stakes game for the U.S. You have a high stakes game every single weekend, basically, for the Galaxy, though, Sebastian. Right now, things are not exactly where you guys want to be. You got that win in RSL. Emma Boateng does what he does, which is score against RSL.
Against RSL, yeah. I know.
Current state of the squad.
No,
how do you feel?
It's been. We definitely needed that win, and yeah, we were grateful for Ima doing his thing against Salt Lake, which I don't know how he does it, but it always comes out that way.
We talked last season about, we were talking about Darlington Nagbe, and Bobby Warshaw was on the show, and he talked about something that makes each player click, each player tick. And he talked about your soul sings when some players like to facilitate play. Some players love to make the strong tackle. For you, what part of the game is the part that you really feel most excited about and happiest in?
I think, you know, facilitating, I think just creating something. I think more, I want to always make an impact in the game. And if I can get, you know, chances on goal or create and set someone up for a goal, or for set someone up for a cross, and then they cross and then it's goal. You know, I just really want to make an impact. That's kind of what gets me.
So I was watching the game against Portland, and you guys are down a man, and you're in central midfield. And I was just wowed, to be honest with you, about the effect that you were able to have on the game. Down a man, dealing with, you know, some midfielders that a lot of people are saying are the best group in this league. And I just thought to myself, I want to see you centrally on the ball as much as possible. Is that kind of what you feel as well? Like, hey, guys, just anywhere I can be on the ball, anywhere I can be a part of the action, that's where I want to be?
I definitely do feel that way, if I'm being honest. Specifically that game, you know, they do have a great midfield and a great team, and you know, we were a man down, and you know, I had to sort of just, you know, hold it down and really just demand the ball and try to get it going for my teammates. And sometimes, you know, that every game's different, but that particular game needed that. And I do love playing in midfield, and it really is a joy for me. And, you know, I'm glad you see it as well.
Well, of course we do. We're excited about it. When you're talking, when you're thinking about the game, though, is there a position to you that you say that's where I'm strongest at?
I feel like that's a good way to put it. I feel like as a number eight or a central midfielder, I feel like that's just where I'm strongest at. More, you know, I can have an impact, like I said before, but I know the role well, you know, playing out wide, so I can do that. And I started out that way, and in the league, and you know, it went well for me. So I can't say I don't like it, because you know, I did have some good times there.
So what is this this season's kind of thrust right now for the Galaxy? You have Kurt Anolfo. He comes in, of course, everyone's very familiar with him from the LA Galaxy 2 days, and that team was extremely successful. And the shift has kind of been towards, hey, let's integrate our young academy players, our USL guys. We're still going to be the Galaxy. We're still going to spend. We're going to go get Alessandrini. Jesse Zardes is not back yet, but we're going to have high-profile players like that. We all know Giovanni Dos Santos. From the outside, this postseason, it's kind of felt like a slight shift in kind of the identity of the club. Have you felt any of that with Kurt coming in, with the movement as far as the roster goes, or has it felt the same?
Well, I think, you know, even though the results haven't reflected it, I think we do have a good group, and I think he's done a good job of that. And I think moving forward, it's only going to get better. And I mean, like any team, you've seen great lineups, you know, on paper, and they haven't found a way in the beginning to just gel together. And I feel like that's what we're going through at the moment. And we have a couple players injured, which never helps, obviously, but it's part of the game. And, you know, it might be a bumpy road at first, but I do feel like when it really counts, I feel like we're gonna pull through.
Give me a little scouting report on Roman Alessandrini. What's this guy like in training? You know, he's still getting used to the league, and you can see that. You know, a couple of weeks, right, a couple of months down the road, what will he be? What is he now?
No, I feel like he's going to affect games, and you know, we want him to be as aggressive as possible, and which he has tried. And obviously he definitely helped us get that win. You know, sometimes it's not going to be pretty, but you know, somehow you just have to grind it out and have a strong mentality and just stick with it, and something will happen. And that's kind of how we got that win. Well, you know, due to him, he got 2 assists. And but I think once he really gets comfortable and starts to realize what this league is like, you know, on a more consistent basis, I think he's only going to get better. He's sharp. He's a great crosser of the ball. He's got a great left foot. You know, he's definitely going to be effective.
All right. We talked about soccer for over 10 minutes. I want to talk about the Power Rangers. Tonight, Power Rangers comes out. You are dating the Yellow Ranger. Is this a dream come true?
Oh, man. No, she's awesome, man. I mean, it's crazy, the whole story of how it all happened. But it's crazy because on the 24th was actually our 1 year. And so when her movie comes out, and it's sort of like my big day as well. So it's kind of all crazy how it all comes together.
This is – so, I mean, if her movie comes out then, can she be in San Jose for this game? I mean, is this going to be – are you a part on the 1 year?
She's definitely going to try, but she definitely has, you know, the release of the movie, and it's sort of a lot to, it's going to be a lot, but she's definitely going to do her best. You know, I definitely – saving the place for her.
Becky G, of course, is who we're talking about here. If you didn't know that, I don't know how you wouldn't, honestly, if you're following MLS. You mentioned before we jumped on here that Power Rangers was kind of the way you guys met?
Right, yeah, correct. It was my former teammate at West Ham, Jordan Spence. He, his wife is the Pink Ranger. They can, you know, girl talk at some point. When the movie started, and you know, she threw my name in there, and that's kind of how we all connected. And it was it's been a blessing for sure.
So at this point, you're just going around, and I'm assuming too, or you just call her Trini and you just call her Yellow Ranger.
I've called her Trini a couple of times, but no, she definitely played the role well. I hope you guys go and watch it. I hope you do.
Well, you hosted a bunch of kids to see the premiere. How was the movie? How was that experience?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a nice way to, you know, just give back, and thanks to Galaxy and the foundation, you know, to really put that all together for us, and you know, we showed up and the kids loved it, and I think you know, it was definitely a big surprise to see, you know, to watch the movie, and then she sort of sneaked in halfway in, and nobody saw her, and then, you know, the lights went on at the end, and she said, "Hey guys," and everybody went nuts, you know. So it was really good for the kids.
One of the parts about this movie that's come out, of course, we haven't seen it yet, unlike you, is that she's one of the first, or is the first, openly gay superhero in public media.
No, it's very interesting. Yeah, I'm very, you know, proud that it's kind of like worked out that way. You know, it's you know, especially with everything that's going on in America or around the world, really. You know, I think it's. You know, and cinema is a huge way to express, you know, art and what's happening in real life and tell stories. And I feel like a lot of people are going to relate to her story in the movie. And, I think it's very good. It's very good for her and very good for, you know, for the movie and for the world, really.
So the Don't Cross the Line initiative is MLS's big thing right now. And it's, of course, to end discrimination in every single form and fashion. And these sorts of things always kind of have the public-facing side, but there's always a personal side, Sebastian. I wonder, when you think about a campaign like Don't Cross the Line, like, what jumps into your head? What's important? In what ways do you maybe think about trying to live some of those things?
No, I mean, definitely, you know, I try to to it's just very important. I feel like it's an important message to everyone, especially, you know, young players and just young people in general, to really know that you don't cross that line and you know, to respect everyone and you know, their sexuality and just the way they choose to be and the way they are. And some people can't change that, and it's important to respect it.
So I don't know how you'll react to this, Sebastian, but okay. I was looking at some photos, and, you know, a lot of them are the press stuff for Becky G, and, of course, she's out there everywhere with the music awards and everything else and now Power Rangers.
Right.
You are kind of the red carpet arm candy for in some ways for her.
Okay, now I understand.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yeah, no, that's what she likes to call it. But I'm just like, I'm there for her. I'm there to support. And if she wants me there, then, you know, then I'm more than happy to be there for her. And, you know, we always have a good time. But that's hilarious to say that.
Yeah. Are there rules to this? Do you get like an outline of here's how you should behave on the red carpet? Like, you know, if I'm taking pictures are happening,
just walk with her, hold my hand and squint.
Just squint?
That's hilarious.
So you're
that's my role play for those. But it's mainly just a supporter. You know, she really values that. And I'm more than happy to do it.
So you're supportive of her, and of as you said, she's going to try and come support you. Her parents, though, are right. from Mexico. Is she a USA fan?
No, she definitely is. I mean, no, she definitely is. I mean, of course, you know, I have people in America have, you know, different types of backgrounds and you know, in their culture. But, you know, hers happens to be Mexican, and her family is very much Mexican. But, you know, she knows she's born here, and especially with me, you know, obviously with all the U.S. stuff, I do believe she is. She does have a U.S. jersey. She's going to be wearing it. So she's definitely going for the U.S.
Got to have that legit on the back. Got to have
DuBois.
It. Or Du Bois. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
We'll see. I don't know. I forget what she has on the back.
Yeah, we'll see what goes down with that. I have one more question for you on this one, because I just found out from an editor here that Becky's fans are called Beasters, which I really don't understand at all. But that got me wondering, Sebastian, I have to imagine – I mean, these fans seem rabid. I just searched the hashtag. What's the weirdest or most interesting Becky G fan interaction you've had? Because I have to imagine that you're like, you're number two on the list for them.
Yo, no. They're, I mean, I'll just never forget. You know, especially when we first started dating, I had an appearance at a Macy's, and I was there with Mike McGee, and you'll never believe the amount of, you know, like, little girls and like just Becky G fans, you know, going just there, you know, just to like, because I'm associated with her, they just want to support me. And it was awesome. But like the things they were giving me to give her and it was madness.
Whoa.
But it's funny, you know, but it's all love. She has a loyal fan base and that's awesome.
I mean, I've seen her Instagram following. It's bigger than yours. We've got to change that, folks. They love Du Bois.
Change that. Yeah. We'll definitely see. We'll see.
We will. We'll also see what happens with the U.S. on Honduras Friday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. FS1 and Uni Mas, maybe Sebastian Legette be on the field from the start. We will see. Sebastian, good luck at training. Good luck in the game, man.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
They all love Du Bois, and we certainly fall in that group as well. Follow him on Instagram, on Twitter. Watch the game on Friday night. We're going to the break right now. When we come back, we'll go right into the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio and hanging out in the blue room doing the mailbag thing, which we really enjoy. And we had so much good mail this time, Dave, that you had to throw some things aside that normally in the past would just kind of break our hearts.
Yeah, it's good stuff. You guys are giving us good stuff. I want you to know that I read every email. So whether or not it gets on the show, I respond to some people outside of the show because I don't have enough time with the greatness that is Matt Doyle and Andrew Reiby to ask every question that the plebeians can bring to you to find guidance in their lives.
Man, you dropping some references.
So
there.
I choose to try and answer them. But we have an unreal one to start with from Ryan Walters, who said, regular listener of the pod and fellow cat appreciator. I think that's for you,
Shout Darryl. Out to General Sal, Taquito. What's up, fellas?
And he says, I want to see if you can help spread the word of MLS in the land of the morning calm. After 3 years in South Korea, he's finally moving to Seoul next month and would love to get a group together to do MLS watch parties at pubs early Saturday or Sunday morning, much like we do in the U.S. for European soccer. So he's at Mr. MR Ryan Walters. That's with an S, Walters, on Twitter. You can shout out to him if you're in Korea and you want to get together with him. He'll be wearing ETR, MLS swag, or K-League stuff. And he also wanted to say that he heard Ben Bear knock Austin Barry for playing in the second division of the K-League a few weeks ago. FC Anyang was the team, and he's going to throw shade back at Ben
Watch
Bear.
Out. Don't go to Seoul, Ben, because somebody will be coming after you. Ryan Walters will be getting at you. Also, I love the idea that we could be a small part of perhaps there being MLS watch parties in Seoul, South Korea, like, you know, the break of dawn. Like that. Oh, if we did that, our mission is done. We've accomplished everything we could ever want to accomplish.
Yeah, it's 13 hours ahead, so you could, like, show up for Eastern time.
Yeah, math is obviously not our skill set here. We're all kind of, like, delaying. Like, so what time would that be?
No, so if a San Jose Earthquake game starts at 11 p.m. Eastern time, you can watch it in the afternoon on the next day.
Yeah, you got noon. Yeah.
We have a friend who covers MLS from Australia, and he wakes up on Sunday afternoon and covers Saturday night games. Bill Carroll, Red Bull Section 132, of course, longtime ETR.
Where else?
He goes, you guys are having the best start to your ETR season ever. Daily shows, great guests and interviews. We all hope you can keep it up. Brian Dunstaff was one of your best guests so far, talking about the early days of MLS and dropping names that all the newcomers to MLS had to Google, including himself. So I thought after all these years of Extra Time Radio, I'd give a little history lesson to your new listeners and drop a few ETR names from back in the early days. Nick Furshaw, Jason Seguini, and, of course, the great Simon Borg hosting
Woo!
The show.
Holler out to all of them. Our precursors, man. I remember when I first started working here, and I had listened to basically every ETR episode on backlog all the way to the beginning, all the way back to the 2010 World Cup when those guys just sat in a room, like the four of them, and just yelled at each other for basically 2 hours a day all throughout the tournament. So when I got here, I would see Simon and Nick and Jason, I think, still at that time, and maybe Greg, like go off to the room and do their thing, and I was always so jealous. And I remember the day I got the call up. I remember coming in. I think somebody was sick. They brought me in. I was so jacked up about it. And then eventually I got to be a full-time member. And now I host the thing, and it's one of my favorite things in the world. To do it twice a week with you guys is a true honor.
You guys, like, Furshaw ran this show with an iron fist.
Yeah,
and
did.
I feel like you got to step up your game a little bit, Andrew. You got to keep Gasman in line, first of all, because he's always running 15 minutes late for everything.
I'm like 15 minutes late, so we're probably 30 minutes late cumulatively.
I'm a rebel, Doyle. You can't keep me contained.
There's no doubt about it. When Nick left, it's not that we don't have structure. It's that we're a little looser. You know, Nick was very regimented. He, you know, play that formation the way I told you to play it. I'm more like, hey, go out there, express yourself. Yeah, express yourself.
You're
have fun.
Nick was more Microsoft. This is more Snapchat.
Yeah, a little bit of that. A little bit of that. I am not Jurgen, by the way.
Let's go to a little bit of rules changes because you asked about this.
Yeah.
I think the obvious one, John Rice emails in, but a few other people are non-PK endings to games. So he throws out, you know, 5-10-minute periods where you start taking a player off every once in a while until you end maybe 7v7s, the shortest you can go. What do we think about this?
I mean, I like the idea. I think I have no problem with PKs, but like I went a step further and just like, let's, if we're going to get rid of this, let's just go real crazy and let's be like, hey, each team has to decide who their fastest player is, and then let's just race the length of the field, and whoever wins the race wins the game. I mean, I'm not saying we should do this. I'm just saying I'd be entertained by like alternative suggestions to game decision. Something like that, like maybe crossbar challenge. I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
That sounds worse than a PK shootout. How about this one? We have Mike from Connecticut, and he says, Doyle, What about a formula for stoppage time? Every time there's a goal or a sub, the ref signals that the clock stops for that time or that that's what's happening, and then everyone can know what stoppage time will be.
No.
No? You like the mystery?
Yes. That's all you're getting from me on this stuff. Do not change the rules. Stop. It's
fine. Whoa.
God, I just want you to express yourself, Doyle. You're just out there playing the left wing. You just keep getting down the byline.
The only thing I care about is bring back golden goal. That's it. Everything else is like I'm fine with the way it is.
You want golden goal?
Yes, 100%.
And then PK shootout or just golden goal until it ends?
Golden goal and then PK shootout. I'm fine with it.
I actually don't have a problem with that either. I think the stakes would be so high, and every single second would just be like, it would be misery, and that's what makes sports fun.
I hope this happens. That tension, oh my God,
what's going
to
happen?
I hope this happens to hear you complain about, oh my God, how can you decide something like that on something like golden goal?
You know what I really enjoy? That Dave's impression of both of us sound exactly the same. He impersonates me to my face all the time, and I just couldn't be more tickled by it.
We have an email here from Jorge. He says, I love the show and have grown from an NYRB fan to a true fan of MLS as a league. And that's in large part thanks to ETR. Well, we appreciate that,
yeah.
Jorge. And that's what we love. I usually enjoy Doyle's skepticism, but on seeing Red Daily, he recently said he doesn't root in MLS anymore. How is that possible?
My job is to be an impartial analyst of the game. So I don't have a favorite team. I have players I enjoy. And that, you know, that includes some on the Red Bulls, and definitely does not include some others on the Red Bulls. And so I just, you know, it actually keeps me sane, because you should see me during college basketball season. I'm a maniac, and it's unpleasant. And so having no real rooting interest and just being able to enjoy the game for the game is so much better. So I love it, and I'm not planning on changing anytime soon.
Doyle really gets upset over the NIT.
I poked you to say, let me get that joke in, because I didn't know if you would make it. And you know what?
Don't worry, Andrew. I got
you. You did me right. Yep.
But he also says ETR curse is clearly true, not just because of these last two interviews, but Jesse Marsh.
Oh, the Jesse Marsh.
Right before CCL. I don't know if you can blame us.
Oh, no. Wait. But we had Caleb Porter on, and they're 3-0.
Oh. Okay, yeah. Back and forth.
So
he said he'd like to hear us talk to Sasha or BWP, but he can't risk taking that chance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Trevor J. Moore, big fan of the show, and he's hearing the Schweinsteiger talk. He's saying it can't work together in the midfield with Dax and Juninho, and he's saying it's not true. He also feels like if Schweinsteiger stays around for another year, like Doyle said, they got to get these young kids, especially the ones in college, to sign so they could play around him, play under him for a little bit and learn a little bit.
I think there's definitely an element of this. Like, if you think that we look at signings like this and we're like, oh, it won't work on the field, or, oh, he's 32, perception, this, that, and the other. But when Schweinsteiger signs with your club, that doesn't just change perception within the U.S. It changes perception internationally. It changes the type of players that know who the Chicago Fire are. It changes what academy kids think about the club. It changes what parents might think about the club. It gives you a jumping off point that I don't think the Chicago Fire have had in a long, long time, if ever. And I know Cuauhtemoc Blanco was huge, but was Cuauhtemoc Blanco an international name, or was he a U.S. and Mexico regional name? I think it was probably more of the second, although he definitely had international cachet. Bastian Schweinsteiger, as a World Cup winner, just him being in your club changes the way people think about it, and that can have a lot of different effects on the playing side, but also on the business side when it comes to sponsors, butts in seats, all the different revenue streams that you need to have a successful club long term.
Well, last one, Cameron Eves from RSL. He's in Provo, Utah. He sent us a 4-page email just venting about RSL.
Wow.
I don't have time to get into it all. I just wanted him to feel heard. So, Cameron, you are heard. I understand the defensive issues. Throughout this season, he went through blow by blow each game. His main point is Aaron Mon, Chris Schuler, and DeMar Phillips shouldn't be starting in MLS. And Beltran, while he was a hero, it might be time for him to go. Now, I don't agree on all those names, but I just want him to feel heard.
Yeah, but look, I do feel the pain, man. There's a big decision coming for RSL. We want to know what you think. Cameron, we want to know who you think should be the coach as well. At Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com is how you can get at us.
And last question, prediction, guys. USA versus Honduras, Friday night.
Yeah, we didn't do the prediction, did we?
Doyle, you go first.
I think it'll be a choppy and nervy 2-1 win for the U.S. with Clint Dempsey doing Clint Dempsey stuff.
I'm going to go 1-0 for the U.S. Josie Altidore beats somebody. U.S. hold it up on the defensive side.
Set pieces.
Christian Pulisic makes us all drool for like 45 straight minutes. It should be a good game no matter what.
I can't believe you think they're going to shut out La Pantera and the squad for Honduras. I'm saying 3-1 U.S. I think 2-1 tight game. U.S. gets a tap in late in the game.
Late in the game. Drama then. Okay, 10:30 p.m. is the game. Watch on FS1 and Unimas. Get the coverage right here at MLSsoccer.com. And, of course, reaction on Monday. We'll see you then.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.